Hello, I'm Robert Rhymes. Welcome to the Angry Admins Podcast. Today's date, October 15th, 2007. This is episode 46. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Angry Admins Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ryan Necessary.
And I'm still here, Mr. Joe Bibby.
Today, we're honored to have a special guest with us, Mr. Robert Rhymes, who we've been trying to iron out schedules with, and it finally happened this week, so we're very happy about that.
Woo-hoo.
We're going to start with just kind of a quick overview of, Robert, some of the stuff you've been doing, and kind of give us a little bit about your background.
Okay. Graduated computer science degree, 98, 99, somewhere mm-hmm. in there. Went to work for Lockheed Martin, Houston, Texas. Robotics department with NASA. Stayed there a couple of years. Went to Killeen, Texas. Did defense contracting there a couple of years. Came back to Houston. Back to the robotics department.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, last year or so, started doing multimedia projects involving 3D animation. So I took a turn for the programming, hardcore programming, into the graphics side of things with video editing,
nice.
3D animation with Lightwave, and scenery 3D with Vue and mm-hmm. Vue Extreme.
Cool.
And that's where I'm at now.
Very nice. Pretty cool. You've really been all over the map. So I tell you what, this week we want to talk to Rob about some of your experiences with the military and military computing. And kind of work that angle of your history. I guess let's start with, so what year did you say you were in Killeen?
99.
Oh, really? So late 90s. Okay. So 99. Give us an idea of, were you a programmer, basically?
I was a software programmer on a HP UX system.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remember the model of our servers. Mm-hmm.
So this was HP's flavored Unix
HP's flavored Unix.
Right. I remember that was very popular at that time, especially 99, 2000. So you're there in the middle of Texas, and you're using HP Unix-type systems. You're a programmer. What sorts of things, say, on a typical day you're coming in, are you fixing code? Are you writing code from scratch, a little of both? Or
The position I was hired for... It was really a blessing because the system we were using was developed in Orlando, Lockheed mm-hmm. Martin Orlando. It had been used there in Killeen.
Mm-hmm.
What they didn't have in Killeen was the development environment. I was hired to run the development bar, get it going, because the development was being done back in Orlando for changes, mm. being long distance. And they had decided, let's move our development lab to Killeen. Because of that, they boxed up the development lab in Orlando and started shipping computers out to Killeen about the time I was hired. So I had a boss with many years experience on the system and helped develop it. However, he was transitioning into management,
mm-hmm.
and myself and another girl were hired to make code changes and run the lab.
Mm-hmm. So did you feel like you were coming in at the beginning of a project, or were you kind of picking up more of in the middle? So it sounds like you're kind of coming into the front of things and can kind of set things up the way you want.
I was coming into an empty room, an HP UX development environment in boxes.
Oh, nice.
Many of them not booted for a while. Many of the disks and tapes
mm-hmm.
Disassembled and disarray.
Wow.
Manuals in boxes. It was, on the software side, it was a dream.
Right.
Here's an empty room. The network was VampireTap. We called it VampireTap. And I'm not a system administrator, so a lot of that was new to me.
Right.
Here's your large cable the size of your two thumbs,
mm-hmm.
and here's this box with a hex screwdriver,
mm-hmm.
and here's your B and C network cable.
Right.
And I'm used to a floppy and some compiling and and I'm thinking, this looks like hardware. What am I supposed to do here?
Right.
And it was wonderful. As a computer guy, having an entire lab to do what you want.
Right.
And my boss, his name Mike Manier, great guy. His whole job was, Robert, you're on your own. That's why I hired you. Call me if you have questions. I'll be in the next building. And I was a kid in a candy store.
So you got to set up the whole lab the way you wanted, figure it out at your own pace, dig through all the manuals, build the network the way you liked it. That was really good.
It was nice. There was no furniture, so I got desks that I wanted.
Nice.
And I had 6 workstations, a server and 6, 7 total workstations. And it was great learning experience for me to go from computer science programmer doing forward kinematics to, here's a lab, you're the sysadmin, and you have to make some code changes, which that was the easy part. Mm-hmm. The hard part was you're your own sysadmin.
Right.
And thank goodness for organizational skills, kind of paranoid about organization. I loved it.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Now, was that the first time you'd ever use Unix, or did you use it in college at all? Or?
Familiar with Unix through the degree and using it everywhere. So I was very familiar with it.
So you didn't have to start from scratch with that.
Correct. I was fine with code. I was fine with shells and scripts and some of the newest items for me were, you know, I'd only been out of college a few years, mm-hmm. but the thousands and thousands of lines of code was compiled through intense corn shell scripts.
Wow.
By a programmer much more senior than I, or anyone I've ever met to this day.
He was still the guru.
He turned corn shell. He could do what I need C++. He did in corn shell.
That's crazy.
And the amazing ability of just dealing with text and strings and popping directories and pushing them and throwing them in cache and just totally replacing keystrokes, hundreds and hundreds of keystrokes, and searching, and you can truly do it in corn shell. I still to this day have kept print screens of some of the amazing functions
mm-hmm. right.
that this guy did in corn shell.
That's
great. Hats off to his name, I don't remember.
So that at that time, so you're setting up this lab, was that on a military base, or was that off-site at like a Lockheed corporate building?
It would be considered off-site. In Killeen, there's some hills in the north, south, east, west, southwest side of Killeen are some bunkers and some hills. They're no longer really used. They might store things there now, but
mm-hmm.
The hills were used for military ops, so we would do this laser tag system. It's like a glorified military laser tag system. Mm-hmm. It's wireless. Nice. So our system collected the data as they played their military games. This HPUX system would have a map on it, GPS systems.
Cool.
It wouldn't show anything like today's fancy graphics. It would mm-hmm. just be a triangle was a certain type of ground troop, and a square was another type of ground troop.
Yeah.
But it worked to the meter.
That's cool.
And this was a long time ago.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming that, you know, all this stuff you are working on, eventually that went to out into the field to be in with these exercises, these simulated exercises.
That's correct.
So what kind of, in the field, what kind of like a building, or where are you in tents, or what are you out in the field in?
The development environment, as I said, was a lab that I got the pleasure of building from the scratch up, moving it from Orlando to Killeen. The working operational environment was, again, HPUX systems,
right?
A square metal container, 25, 30 feet wide, 60 feet long, 70 feet long. They called them bunkers, metal bunker, air conditioned,
mm-hmm.
beautiful, beautiful computer lab.
Cool.
Weatherproof.
Now this is Texas. Were they air conditioned good enough though, or was it hot in there?
Many, many air conditioning units. Many, very nice. Now when they didn't work, it would be bad.
You would get roasted.
But they were running 24/7.
Wow, that's cool. So all those workstations were set up inside.
All those workstations set up inside this 3C, Command Control Center, is what we called it, the 3Cs.
Okay. And were those the, like, the thin net networks with the taps and all that kind of stuff? Like
a, Yes, the vampire taps.
Like the bus topology.
And I call that vampire because I would put my aluminum vampire tap and I would get this hexagon screwdriver and I would tighten it as tight as I could and no signal.
Right.
And I'd take it off.
And redo it.
Redo it. Yeah. And no signal. And I'd call my boss and I'd say, Mike, blankety blank blank, this blank blank. And he'd laugh, ha 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 ha, do it one more time. And I would tighten it up and I'd get full signal. I said, man.
So now there's like four extra holes in the cable though.
Oh, I had, where each workstation where was probably 15 holes. And don't you dare let your foot stretch out from and the workstation.
Tap that cable.
And tap your little tap. So I elevated them about 8 inches above and drilled a screw into the wall and zip-tied my entire thick ether 8 inches above the entire lab in a square.
Wow. Makes you appreciate Cat 5.
Oh, man.
It's pretty nice these days, right?
Cat 5 is heaven, yes.
Yeah. That's cool. So talking about network, that building, was it networked to anything else or was it kind of its own little isolated LAN?
The 3Cs or this container, our lab, it's the real-time runtime environment collecting data from the troops as they're doing a laser tag. And right outside is two large antennas to collect all this data.
They're getting the stuff with radio.
Data's coming in over radio. Workstations are standalone environment collecting all of this data, capturing it to disk in real-time logs. There was multiple workstations in this command control center because as your troops were out in the field doing their laser tag ops, a lieutenant or a colonel was sitting at a workstation with a headset mic. He's talking in real time, and they would be possibly one row was battling the row behind you, a red on blue, a blue on red. And they were doing multiple military maneuvers that was way over my head. I was very unfamiliar with military slogans. But the system is running full speed, capturing all the data. 99% of what we were capturing went to log files. Multiple dot matrix printers just printing out logs and stats.
I bet it could get loud in there, right?
A metal very building. Loud, wow. Very loud metal
man,
building square.
Dot matrix.
Man.
And so it was really a data collection system, and hard drives were filling kind of, you know, data, text data. You can hold a lot on these hard drives.
Was there servers, or was each box kind of its own collection?
One single server collecting data, multiple workstations used for the graphics, because it still wasn't graphics intense, but it was a real-time updating map. With a nice expensive GPS signal coming into the server, and they're all pinging on the server every few seconds for a real-time position of your icons.
Wow. So you mentioned graphics. What kind of monitors are you looking at in these days?
Back then, it would probably be the nicest CRT that HP had, and I want to say 28.
Wow.
A large 26 or 28-inch. Similar to an Eagle lab at
so that's probably
hundreds
like
of pounds.
Yeah, I'd be at least 100 pounds.
They were heavy. I didn't move them.
Right.
I could 10 years ago move it myself. Now I'd grab one of you guys and say, well, how big were the monitors in the Eagle lab?
Oh, I don't know. They had the big SGIs, right?
The big SGIs.
Those are 20. They're probably at least 21s.
Yeah, these were a little bigger.
Well, and the bigger they are, the thicker that glass is on the front. I wonder how thick those 20-inch monitors.
These were huge monitors. Man.
That's awesome.
So you mentioned being mixed in with military people. So you're a civilian contractor. You're working for a corporation. Are you taking direction directly from military officers, or are they yelling at your corporate boss who then passes the word on to you? Or how does that workflow happen?
Amazing question. Being non-military and seeing a chain of command in operation, today's workforce has a lot to learn.
Wow. So it's a big different culture.
Different culture. There's always an exception, as the slogan, there's one bad apple in every right. bunch. There is an exception where a military personnel would come to you directly and say, I need the following. Most of the time, it's just so minor, it's not a big issue. Most right. of the time. And it's because they know you, or they know you're the guy with that data, or they know you can do it. Why go through two meetings when... But 99% of the time, a chain of command is always followed. And it's amazing that it's efficient. It truly is. There's a lot of complaints mm-hmm. about the military. And as I say, there's one bad apple in every bunch. So, and the bad thing about that saying is that you take that one bad apple that's the communication breakdown.
Right.
When you raise that bad apple to the top, so there's a handful of people in charge of the entire ground troop force in the United States. Well, one bad apple at the top, the problem is it affects
everybody.
100,000 yeah. troops below.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the side effect to that slogan. But down where I was, it was very efficient. I would get my direction, whether it be software change, the... In fact, I remember being out there at 2000 because I did the Y2K bug fix for
some of the stuff.
For yeah. the code, for the runtime code.
Wow.
And it was the biggest issue until it got to me and I looked at the four lines of code that I changed.
Right.
And I thought, all right, I got to go back to 62, 72, minus this, done. And all I was changing was a report.
Right.
The entire real-time system grabbed a time and date stamp from our GPS unit, and all I did was change them to floats, which a couple of them weren't, but once I floated every date variable, there was only like four changes on printouts and a couple of variables that were all pound defined that every file was getting, so I had like two pound defines I changed through the whole 200,000 lines of code,
mm-hmm.
and then four reports... And that was my Y2K fix that was brief to, like, the Pentagon.
Wow.
Wow.
So, nice. I guess with respect to... So, you kind of said you're your own sysadmin. If you needed a restore from backup tapes, is that falling on you?
That was me.
So, how about... Did they ever ask you about security? I mean, I realize you're like, an isolated LAN. And back in those days, computer security wasn't the... Really wasn't the big deal right, it is now. Yeah.
Well, people just didn't know about security. Now it's all in the news.
You know, back then, a lot of your military ops devices, they will not connect to a World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, World Wide Web was available. You know, I came over to Lockheed. We had the web. We browsed the web.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the OS back then. 10 years ago, I don't remember when it was.
Yeah, we're probably all still Windows 98.
Yeah, it's probably 98.
Probably 98.
98 second edition.
Because Windows 2000 wasn't here until like 2002 or something like
that. Yeah, and I think ME came out at that time, but
we don't.
I hope nobody
ME.
Here used that for more than 5 minutes.
It's like Fight Club. We don't talk about
That's
ME.
Right.
But yeah, wow. So
most systems that you would approach in the field, if they're running a call to fire, which is a handful of Unix workstations in hardened cases, hardened monitors, and they're doing a military job running a map software,
mm-hmm.
pushing buttons, collecting data. It is not designed for World Wide Web anything.
Right.
They just don't mm-hmm. use... It's a tool like a gun.
Right.
It's got its use.
A single function.
Single function. Mm-hmm. It's bulletproof single function. The code maybe 25 years ago... It's still running a flavor of Linux because mm-hmm. they no longer support HPUX.
Right.
But it has a single function,
mm-hmm.
extremely expensive. But it's not designed to cross into another net.
Now, you're out there in the heat and the dust. If one of those hardened computers does have a problem, or the monitors, or the cable, what are you doing for spares, repairs? Does that all fall back on you and your company?
At the time, we had a contract with HP. I don't, Dell has their golden
support. Same day, Mac, supposedly.
Mac has their
AppleCare.
AppleCare, yeah. The top of the line. We had the HP Care.
Mm-hmm.
So I had at one time, I had in my lab the server of all things, the BNC connection network went out of that card. And they were very modular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were thin boxes, 4 inches, 5 inches thick, and 14 inches tall or 13 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Very thin, slender rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
So I slid out the network card, called the HP support, which was in Austin, which is an hour and 40 minutes away.
That's not bad.
And the guy on the phone said, oh, you've got the following service. I said, yes, sir. Let me know when you're coming. And he said, and he paused and tried to say, I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
Of course, I'd call it 4:20. Yeah. So, and he would remind me that this service agreement ended in 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And that was a large issue, was when the HPUX was going out of the door.
Yeah.
Just worldwide. It was going out during that time.
Right.
Wasn't a hot computer to go buy for your whole system. Your, you know, $15 million system. You didn't want to run on HPUX.
And I think Digital Deck, I think they were on top of the, I think they were, them and IBM with AIX were kind of, and Sun was kind of climbing the ladder at that time. They were like the Tyrannosaurus Rex of Unix at that time. But yeah, HPUX, I always remember it being kind of a peripheral system. Like there was always, no matter where you went, someone always had it, but it was never more than like 20% of that network. So I could definitely see that.
I remember an interesting, to follow with that story, the most memorable experience was when the network card went down on my server. I pulled it, called support. The guy was coming out the next day with that card,
right,
and some other parts just in case. And what little troubleshooting we did on the phone. And luckily, I had a boss who knew everything. So he said, it's this card, call him, and the guy on the phone will make you do all this again, but just do it.
Yeah.
So you go through the ropes again. And I, as the sysadmin and the developer, I wheel over to another workstation to compile, pull up, I had a few tools I needed to use for database and extracting stuff, and they didn't work because license keys.
Oh,
floating license keys. Yes. With that was my introduction back then to Flex LM, and I thought it was a basketball game. I kept thinking Flex LM. It made me think of some basketball game for some reason.
So let me guess. It was trying to talk to the server network.
The server, when I spawned the server, would go, Flex would launch, and I remember installing everything. I just had forgot that Flex spawns in the RC.
Right.
Oh, this is a long time ago. RC dot whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So as Flex would launch for all of these five or six apps, all used Flex, if you remove the network card, it fails.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, all my workstations were down. Never forget that.
Yeah. Mm. And you know what? As you're saying that, I'm realizing that we still are vulnerable to that same thing.
Yeah,
because
we are.
Our server is the license server,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Not for very many applications, but enough that it would be a problem.
It's right. Always the key app, the compiler. Here I needed to compile on a proprietary C compiler used and bundled by the Florida team for this specific, because of certain DLLs needed to compile.
Right.
And here they have a proprietary compiler that if my server's down and Flex doesn't spawn, I can't compile.
Yeah. And even today, they still want you to send them, whether it's, you know, MATLAB or Unigraphics or whatever, they want you to send them the MAC address for your network card of your server. So I'm not sure what you do in a virtualized.
Well, so the beauty of that is you can change your MAC address at will.
Yeah.
I mean, you can kind of do it on a machine anyway, but in a virtualized, it's a virtual network adapter, so you could use it in multiple locations.
That's another show. Yeah, wow. So, but it's funny that you know, you're talking about people coming out next day to replace network cards and, mm-hmm. you know, the MAC address. And, you know, 17 years later, we're still kind of in the same boat. I mean, the computers are all faster. The monitors are now flat. The computers are quiet. The printers are quiet now instead of dot matrix. But we're still kind of dealing with the same same sorts of situations.
Yep.
It's funny.
It is funny.
Well, Rob, that's really interesting. I'm really glad you were able to finally get with us. And I'm sorry it took us so long to iron out all of our schedules. But we do appreciate you coming on and relaying some stories about good old Killeen.
Good old days.
And working with computers out in the dust.
And it was hot.
It was hot. Cool. Well, thanks for coming out, Rob. We really appreciate it. All right, folks, that's the show this week. As always, if you want to check out any back episodes or download any of our old show notes or whatever, feel free to stop by www.angryadmins.com. Until next week, I am Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
And I'm Robert Rhymes.
Stay angry.